Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance, and don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and all the other things that you've got there that will help you to have the maximum opportunity to be successful, including some of the past visits that we've had with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. She's been with us now for, we're in our eighth year now, Joan.
I can't believe it.
How about that? Welcome back.
Oh, today is a big day. You probably have no idea what today is.
You're probably right.
It's my eighth anniversary at Kiplinger today, on this day,
I'll be
8 years ago. Yeah.
So you hadn't quite been with the Kiplinger a year when you first started doing
my show. I was a neophyte. You see how highly they thought of you.
Well, I think they said, who can do this? Well, let's get the new kid.
Right.
She doesn't know. She's not smart enough to object yet.
Right.
She doesn't know enough about what's going on here to object. Everybody
right.
else ran for the hills.
Right, exactly.
Well, happy anniversary, baby.
Thank you very much.
That's great. So you've just had your seventh anniversary with me, and now your eighth anniversary with Kiplinger. When's your anniversary with Ray?
Oh, that's not till June.
And how many will that be?
12.
12 years.
You know what's weird?
Eight of the best years of your life, right?
Right. Maybe nine. The Reverend Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King, who unfortunately passed away, anniversary was ours June 18th, although they were married, I think, in 1953, whereas we were about 40 years after that.
Right, right. Well, now that we got the anniversaries out of the way, that was scintillating, Joan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for keeping us right on the edge of our seats there with all that.
I need to be excited.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk about the lead in the Kiplinger letter this week, the president's 2007 budget. Apparently, he's kind of like, according to Kiplinger, Joan, Mr. Bush is kind of like Rodney Dangerfield. He can't get any respect from anybody.
Well, I'm thinking he's probably doing something right if he's making everybody upset.
That's a good way to look at it. See, that's
right.
kind of the way I feel about things.
Right.
I mean, that's like the hat trick, isn't it? If he makes the Republicans mad, he makes the Democrats mad, and the people in the middle mad.
Right.
So what is it that the liberals won't like about his budget?
Well, he's going to be freezing or pretty close to freezing most of the domestic spending programs, and the only programs that are going to see increases will be defense and homeland security.
Right. Right. Well, they're not happy about some of the things that he wants to cut. But you know, Joan, some of those things, and we're gonna get into that in a minute. Let's just hold that thought
till
we get on down the page a little bit, because we are going to talk about some of those entitlement things. What are the Republicans unhappy about? The conservatives unhappy about?
Well, conservatives really want. I guess he's not cutting enough for them. They want to really get rid of the deficits. I would guess that they are happy about the defense spending, but not happy
right.
about the high deficits. But you also have the whole business lobby that's unhappy about other domestic spending cuts as well.
And of course, we need to make sure, Joan, that we differentiate between his constituents who are not members of Congress and the Republicans who are members of Congress.
Sure.
Because if his Republican members of Congress were worried about deficits, they would quit spending. Right?
Right, right. Well, they also have their constituents to answer to, and therefore they're interested in that four-letter word that begins with a P.
Right.
Pork.
Pork. But so are you saying that they're being disingenuous? On the one hand, they're supposedly for smaller government and less spending, but yet when it comes time to actually doing it, nobody does anything about it. Is that what you're saying?
Darn right I am, sure.
I think you're right. I think we now know, Joan, which party is the big spending party, right?
Both of them.
It's the party in power.
The party, exactly.
It has nothing to do if it's a Republican.
Right.
I mean, here we've got a Republican president 5 years, a Republican Congress over 10 years, right?
Right.
And Mr. Bush has failed to veto one single bill. Now, let me tell you something. If his mother were passing all, were putting up all the bills, he should have vetoed at least one of hers.
You would think, yeah.
Let alone...
Well, you know what? I wouldn't veto anything that, Mrs. Bush put up.
Yeah, she might hurt you, you know?
Yeah.
I like her, though. I've heard
she
her speak.
She could pack a wallop, I think.
I heard her speak. She's a she's the real deal that Bush is.
Oh, yeah.
But seriously, Joan, why do you think... It's a drug for them, isn't it, spending our money?
I think that's probably the way you have to look at it.
It's the drug of choice, and it is the lever that incumbents use to get reelected, isn't it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, when you're outside looking in, it's easy for us to say spending has to be cut. But then when you're on the inside and you see the competing interests, and again, I'm not excusing them, but I think you do get caught up in the need to make sure that you get reelected, and with that comes the need to make sure your constituents are taken care of.
And nobody's talking anymore about term limits, right? There's no more veiled threats for term limits, right?
I forgot what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about some of the tax cuts? Now, you're saying here on page one, Joan, that his new budget plan is also going to give short shrift to some income tax cuts, which you and I've talked about quite a bit before. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. And there's quite a number of tax cuts that I know that business thinks are important for the economy. And part of that is the whole capital gains and dividend situation.
But what about the alternative minimum tax? I'm a little confused about the way you've written this. Are you saying that his new budget will include the a fix for alternative minimum tax or not?
Well, I think I have a feeling that the way we wrote it is we're not sure because the way
that would track with what I'm thinking.
Right. I think what he might do in the budget proposal is not mention the AMT, but yet it's still a very live issue in Congress.
Ah, so you think they might make sure it's in there? Well, it needs to be a live issue, and I'm surprised, and I'm a little disappointed. I'll be disappointed in Mr. Bush if he doesn't make it part of his plan.
Right.
Because that's a big issue, alternative minimum tax, as you and I have talked about quite a bit before.
True.
When we come back, we're going to get back to that issue of the Democrats, what they think about the budget, and also about them sitting on their hands during the State of the Union speech. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pryor.
Your heart may be broken tonight.
Are you reeling in the years? Showing away the time. Are you gathering up the keys?
We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassie, the small business advocate, and Joan Pryor is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. And we're talking about Mr. Bush's budget plan for 2007. Joan, we're down to where the Democrats, what you guys say is neither side are going to address the real problem, which is entitlement spending. Now, you have a great little take on the opportunity to save money in the budget that you always tell us about. Give it to us again.
Me?
Yeah. Well, you talk about how much we can actually really affect in the budget.
Oh, well, my little riff on, let's say you got rid of what's known as discretionary domestic spending. That little riff?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, and when I say discretionary, I mean things like, I don't know, education and student loans, small business loan guarantees, things like that. You could wipe all that out tomorrow. And I think people don't realize you still wouldn't solve the problem of budget deficits, by a long shot.
Things like farm subsidies.
Exactly.
And other things that you could even take out things like national security.
Right, and that's
things
why
like
I get
that.
A little frustrated sometimes when politicians say, we've got to cut spending more. Well, that's true, but what kind of spending are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And forget, I won't even argue about whether we need more or less defense spending. Put that aside for a minute. If all right. you did was do something about entitlements, you would have your problem solved, because the two things that are really driving the deficit are, number one, entitlements, and number two, interest on the debt. And there isn't a whole lot you can do about interest on the debt until you get the deficit down.
According to you guys, it's 8% of the budget now.
Which, is to me, is huge.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
But what is the total ticket for entitlements as a portion of a total budget?
Are you sitting down?
I will be.
Okay, 68% of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, more than two-thirds?
And plus, then you take 8% for tax for interest.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's entitlements. I mean
yeah.
discretionary.
Exactly.
But,
proving my point.
Discretionary is not really a good word to use, is it?
Well, I think
some of those things are not really discretionary. They're just not. They're just not a long-term commitment like Social Security is.
Right, and I guess very technically, even Social Security and Medicare aren't 100% entitlements, quote unquote, because those programs could be changed. But it's just that if nothing is done to those programs, because a person is automatically entitled to them, they get that money.
Now, Joan, here are a couple of trick questions.
Uh-oh.
Do you agree that something needs to be done with Social Security? Maybe not Mr. Bush's plan, but something needs to be done with entitlements programs?
I'm trying to figure out how that's a trick question.
Just answer the question. Do you agree? Sure you do.
Of course I do.
We all know that something's got to be done.
Yeah, but the question is what?
Here's the trick question. Why did the Democrats give themselves a hand? Did you know that? You know they gave themselves a standing ovation the other night? You must have missed that part.
At what point? I missed it.
Mr. Bush talked about the fact that we must do something about our dysfunctional entitlement programs, Social Security primarily, but he made his comment was in a negative way, and the Dems stood up and gave themselves a hand, as if to say, "Nope, we're not going to let you do any of that. We're not going to let you fix those. We're very proud of ourselves because we stopped you from making the adjustments to Social Security."
Well, there was two schools of thought on that as to whether what the president wanted to do would fix Social Security.
Right.
So, you know, again, it's all very partisan.
Well, but and I agree. The point that I'm making, and I'm trying to be bipartisan here in my indignation, Joan. But the thing is that they didn't have an alternative plan. They just were against what he had. What he offered.
Well, again, it's all political posturing. I knew the Democrats felt, and I'm not agreeing with them necessarily, but from their point of view, is that can be a political trap if you put out your plan. I mean, and this is crazy. Nobody should be worrying about political traps, but it's a fact of life.
That's the ugly part of Washington, D.C., isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Well, Joan, you know, I keep thinking about when we think about all these entitlements that we have, that we've established. Those are 20th century mechanics, 20th century things that we've developed.
Yeah.
They remind me of the defined benefits programs that GM and Ford and United and all those other companies have that they now can't pay for. Right?
Right. Absolutely.
The government is, if you think about it, I think you'd agree with me, the government is no different from those companies having established 20th century promises that the 21st century is really not conducive in the 21st
right.
century. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that sure is a good analogy, I think, yeah.
Well, and now what United did, which they just came out of bankruptcy, Joan, as you know.
Yes.
What they did, they basically shucked a lot of, if not all of their retirement obligations, didn't they?
I think they did.
And they sent it over to that government agency,
PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee.
How do you remember that? I can never remember that name.
Oh, I've had to cover it for too long.
Yeah. PGBC.
No, PBGC.
All right, I got that. So they sloughed that off over to them. Well, you know, I predicted that one of the car dealers would go bankrupt this year. If they do, will they do the same thing?
Oh, very possible.
And
sure.
If it's the same thing as what the government has with regard to its commitments and Social Security and other commitments, you know, how long before what some people are predicting happens, and that the government goes bankrupt?
Well, you're asking a $64 question. Lighten up, Jim.
I know. Quick break, 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde.
Lonely teardrops. Come home. Come home.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blassingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pryde is with us, and you'll know us apart because I'm the one with the horse throat, the husky voices. As Joan says, is it? Are you sure it's not the sexy voice, Joan?
I think it is, actually.
Maybe a little sexy?
Yeah. I wish I had that.
Joan, I want to get back to this budget thing. I want to talk a little bit more about that because isn't it a fact, Joan, that the government is having record revenue right now? They're collecting lots and lots of money right now.
That I did not know.
I think that's the case.
Wow.
Well, the economy's doing well, and if you're a supply sider like I am, not to say that you are, but I am.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes.
That.
Then supply side economics is working because they cut taxes, the economy's growing, people are paying taxes on that growth, and the government's got lots of money to spend. So, Joan, after 9/11, that was different. Things were different. The states were in trouble.
Right.
As you may know, the states are flush with cash now.
States are doing pretty well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's only been, 3 years that you and I reported. They said that one or two states was near bankruptcy.
I know.
But now they're flush. Joan, supply side economics works. But here's my point. The government has plenty of money, but they won't stop spending. So the problem is, the cash that they're getting. The problem is not that they need more cash. The problem is they won't stop spending, and it's both parties.
Well, but again, the spending, quote-unquote, that you're talking about is largely Social Security and Medicare. It's not that they're spending. It's that they're refusing. They're terrified of being politically courageous and doing something about these programs. And I say that about Republicans and Democrats.
And Democrats, right. I agree. The Democrats are the big... In my mind, the Democrats are the first problem because they're trying to thwart anything Mr. Bush does. But the Republicans don't have enough backbone, in my opinion, to do what's right. They don't have enough of them to do what's right. And that's my opinion. I know that's not yours.
Right. Well, I equally blame both sides. But, it's a free country.
Well, but somebody has to be blamed first. And so I'm going to blame the Democrats first. Somebody has to go first, Joan.
Okay.
Let's move over. The economy was off a little bit in the fourth quarter of 2005.
Yes, it was, but don't panic. We're saying calm down. We're going to see a healthy rebound during this first quarter of 2006. We're saying that businesses and consumers are going to be spending again.
I'm going to predict that 1.1% growth in the fourth quarter is going to be ratcheted up in about 30 days.
And as you know, that often happens, revision to these numbers. So.
The reason I say that, Joan, is we track the economy here with people in the field, people out there where things are happening every month, two different groups. And we didn't see that kind of an attitude. We didn't see 1.1% attitude from those business owners. That number surprised me, 1.1% growth. In the fourth quarter, that was surprising to me. I think that's going to be. I think that's going to go
too.
Up. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Greenspan had his last day this week, Joan.
He certainly did.
The Fed.
He did, and what did he do on his last day?
He did,
which was not mentioned in this letter because it came out before that.
The Fed. I'm not going to say Mr. Greenspan because I think it's wrong, and I may have been guilty of it in the past. I think it's wrong to personify the Fed by the chairman. But the Fed raised interest rates another quarter of a point to 4.5.
Sure did.
Fed funds rate, Joan, what was it? 18 months ago, it was 1%. Now it's 4.5.
It's pretty amazing.
Nothing but raises ever since they got started going back up.
That's right.
Johnny One Note. That's what I call Mr. Greenspan, John. He can either go up or he can go down. He can't
now,
go up.
Now, what do you think about this last one?
Which one
I
is
mean,
that?
Was that the one they just did?
I don't think it's necessary.
Right.
Because, and I'll tell you what, it's certainly going to hurt the economy. It's going to slow down the economy because...
I would think so, yeah.
Because that makes prime rate 7.5. And that makes small business owners, when they borrow money, they're now borrowing at 8.5, 9.5, 10.5.
Right. And us poor little homeowners with home equity loans and home equity lines of credit that are not fixed are not happy.
That's right. And some people, now I predicted that they wouldn't go more than two more raises. Well, the one they just did and two more are up to a maximum of 5%.
So two after this, you're
two
saying?
More. Well, at least another half a point somewhere during the year.
Okay.
I predict, though, Joan, that the next meeting, they will not raise rates next time.
Wow.
I'm going to do that right now. 20-Tail, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us. That's Robert Cray, ladies and gentlemen. My favorite blues man. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's my favorite blues girl. Right, Joan?
Huh?
And she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I just want to see if you were awake, Joan. At least I didn't call you a gal.
Gee, right? Thanks.
Yeah.
That's better.
Joan, the Kiplinger letter is what we've been working out of for the last 7 years.
It is.
I've been doing it almost 8 years. Someone prior to you, Gary Matthews. And that's the weekly letter, ladies and gentlemen, the flagship document that Kiplinger publishes every week, now since 1923. They also have three biweekly letters. Every other week you can get the tax letter, the agriculture letter, or the California letter. Either of those will come by mail, right, Joan, or email.
Yes.
And then there's a magazine that you can buy on the newsstand, or they'll send it to you. But you can't get that by email, right, Joan? It's too big.
Well, you could go to their website and get a lot of the content on the website.
But not the whole thing.
You can't carry the content in your purse.
Not a PDF of it somewhere, right?
Right,
okay.
Exactly.
What's it called?
So that is Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can find all this on your website, right, Joan? What's that?
Yes, it's www.kiplinger.com.
And I encourage you to check that site out, folks, and bookmark it, because I use it all the time. It's even the part, even though I'm a subscriber and I can get back into the bowels of the site and find out some of the good stuff in the back, some of the stuff on the front part, the public access is good stuff, too, and I encourage you to check that out. Joan, there's a website where people can subscribe to, can't they?
Right.
I mean a phone number.
The phone number, right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
All right. So call them up and tell them you heard about it from me. And when they hang up, call them back and don't say that again. Okay, Joan. Let's move down and talk about retail business. This gift card thing is interesting. We met a father and son who's in the gift card business. And one of the things that they do, they call them stored value cards.
Right.
And this is where you can put $50 in it and then give the card to somebody as a gift. And they use it anywhere. It's like a MasterCard or whatever. It's not necessarily a gift card from one particular store.
Oh, I've used some of those, yeah.
Yeah.
I call them generic gift cards, and they're good, you know, anywhere, theoretically. Yeah,
exactly.
Many
but,
places.
But a lot of companies saw an increase in their own affinity gift cards, didn't they, this year?
Yes, that's right. They did.
10%. And how is that affecting the economy and their business?
Well, we're saying this is great for retail sales. The thing that confuses me, though, maybe you can help me out with this, is that if I'm a retailer, I can't book that as a sale when I issue the card and get the money, mm-hmm. even though I've got the money in my hands. If that amount of money is never redeemed, I can never post that as a sale.
But I got the cash.
But I've got the cash. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that's not a bad thing, Joan, to have the cash and never have to deliver on it. In fact, I'd like to have a business model like that, Joan. just do that all the time. I don't think that's a bad thing, but they can't book the business until they do the transaction. But
right.
Tell us why companies like these gift cards. There's one little thing about them that we know.
Well, because it lures the customer in. People spend more. I mean, I go in to use up my gift card, and maybe I'll spend an extra $20 buying something else.
So if I give you a $50 card to Saks, well, you and I both know that you don't wear any $50 shoes. You only wear $200 shoes. And so you're going to spend another $150, right, on those shoes.
Well, it depends on how cheap a person is, and I'm pretty darn cheap.
You're pretty tight, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
That's squeaking you hear, folks. That's Joan walking around. Okay, so that's an interesting thing. But the thing that this little company I was talking about, the good thing about them is that you can actually customize the card you give with your own logo.
Oh, I see.
Small businesses can do this,
yeah.
And they make it available through banks, through small banks, independent banks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way for small businesses to get into the gift card business, so to speak.
Ah.
It's a little credit card with stored value. And even though they could use that credit somewhere else, it still has your logo on the card.
Right.
See? So it's a good, pretty good idea. All right, let's move on down and talk. Let's talk about the Supreme Court, Joan. Let's move on down. That was
sure.
An interesting little thing that this week. We had two brand new Supreme Court justices attending the State of the Union speech. That was pretty cool.
That's right. The new Chief Justice, John Roberts,
right.
And the brand new, sworn in that day,
the ink was still
Samuel
wet on
Alito.
His signature, wasn't it?
In fact, they had to do that so fast, they had to redo the swearing in the next day, you know, the real official one.
Yeah. Yeah, they had that yesterday. The president flew back from Nashville to attend that whole thing. You know, I was not sure that the Senate could actually... you know, on Tuesday, could get all that done, could get him approved and some of the other things that they had to do. I was concerned they weren't going to get all that done. But here's the most interesting thing, Joan. He's already voted on one issue.
That's right. I know that.
Tell us about that.
It had to do, I believe this is the person who was going to be executed.
Yep. In Florida,
and who,
I think.
Yes, and who I guess filed a petition saying that the chemicals used in his execution were cruel and inhuman.
Right.
And Alito voted with the majority to allow the stay.
How about that? But he voted against the conservatives.
He voted against Roberts and Thomas.
How about that? Yeah. Now, my question is, Joan, where are they going to find some friendlier chemicals for these people? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Quick break. We're going to talk about Microsoft and the new Vista program that they got coming out right after these messages. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and Joe Pride is our guest. Joan, on this day in 1887, the folks in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, first drug a poor little sleepy groundhog out of his burrow and stuck him out in the meadow there to see if he would see a shadow or not.
Do you ever wonder where they came up with this idea?
I don't know, but I wonder if anybody's ever gotten their finger bitten off dragging a groundhog. You know, they're pretty harmless animals unless you stick your finger in their face.
Yeah, well, I can understand that.
They got some mean teeth.
Yeah.
But anyway, the idea is if he sees a shadow, he runs back into his burrow, and we got 6 more weeks of winter. If it's cloudy, the opposite. Now, today, according to you, I haven't seen it yet, according to you, he saw his shadow.
Well, that's what they're telling me on the internet.
Yeah, so he saw his shadow, and that means 6 more weeks of winter. But, Joan, is that just in Punxsutawney, or is that everywhere?
Well, theoretically, it's everywhere, but
yeah.
I'm going to figure it's just...
Is there a Siberia, Phil? I mean, do they do that over there?
Siberia,
I need to know these things, Joan.
A Siberian Leonid or something
like
that. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Victor.
Vladimir, yeah.
Yeah, Vladimir. I like that one. Okay, Joan. Microsoft is coming out with a new upgrade for their PC systems.
Yes.
A new operating system to replace Windows.
Yes.
XP, which is what I use. It's called Vista. Windows,
yes,
Vista.
Right.
And what's it going to be? What's the advantage of Windows Vista?
Well, we're saying better protection from hackers, which everybody likes.
And they could use that because the hackers do not like Microsoft.
Right. Encrypted files.
Right.
So in case you lose the machine somehow.
They can't get into them. You don't have to worry about somebody getting stuff that you don't want them to have.
Right. Okay. It says a simpler interface. In other words, you don't have to go through a long start menu to get to where you want to go.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What's a transparent window? What does that mean?
Well, yeah, I'm curious to see what this is going to be like, because it says allowing users to see many programs at once.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. There's another thing that Jeffrey Zabar, who was on the previous hour, something else he mentioned that I don't see here, mm-hmm. Joan, in your letter, that Vista is going to offer a robust search feature.
Oh.
Maybe to rival Google.
Google, right. That would be interesting.
See, Google is really the only organization that wakes Microsoft up at night.
Right.
Over the years. Because, as you know, Google is starting to get into Office Suite kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They've started offering, or are going to start offering, an Office Suite of products.
Right.
And Google, even though Google doesn't have the background that Microsoft does in that field, they got enough money to do anything they want to do.
Well, that's true.
So that'll be interesting. But what you guys are saying is that people might be slow to change from XP to Vista, right?
Well, you know, it's hard. As we say, their IT staffs aren't yet trained. And,
right.
You know, they got to make sure all their software is compatible. And usually when one of these systems comes out, there's bugs. And I think people mm-hmm. want to lie low and wait till those bugs are figured out. Although, I must say, I think I've heard that XP has quite a lot of problems with it. So I would think people would be running to embrace Vista when it comes out.
We've had pretty good success with XP.
Okay.
We haven't had any trouble. Of course, we didn't actually convert. We bought some new computers that had some new IBM ThinkPads that actually had the XP already on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have to go from like Windows, you know, 90, model
95.
92 or something, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we've had any big problems with XP.
No.
So that hasn't been that bad. Let's move on down and talk about the internet telephony, the voice over IP. It's getting better, according to Kiplinger.
Getting better. Improved sound quality and fewer problems with the system.
Right. But are you still able to use the devices? You know, to me, we're still used to our phone devices, right?
Right.
Not being hooked up to a computer. I don't know that anybody has really demonstrated how, for example, if you do it at home, how you use the devices to talk.
Well, now you've just gone way beyond
making my point, see? if they've been doing a good job, you'd be able to explain to me how that works.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they need to quit talking about the technology and start talking about how customers use the technology.
I think you're right.
What do you think? You are?
I'm with you.
What was that, Joan? What was that again?
No, I've lost my head.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job today, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I will be too. It'll be tomorrow, but I'll be in Washington, D.C. I'll be on the road tomorrow, broadcasting from the beautiful Georgetown Inn in Georgetown, near hard by to Washington, D.C. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.